Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our Monday morning health brief, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. And it's Dr. Irfan Hafiz with us this week. Doctor, good morning to you. Let's start with what they're doing in Ireland, of all places, putting warning labels on alcoholic beverages. What do you think about this, and should we do that here?
Yeah, good morning. I did see that article come out. I mean, we've long known that there are some, you know, health risks associated with alcohol. But I think this is going beyond that. There was something coming up in Thailand and some parts of Canada as well, looking at some of the relationships of higher risk of cancers with alcohol. I know this is highly controversial still. I think direct link is not quite there, but I think there are some warnings and suggestions that maybe this might reach that point.
2026 is when containers of beer, wine, and liquor sold in Ireland will be required by law to have a label in big red capital letters saying there is a direct link between alcohol and fatal cancers, and drinking alcohol causes liver disease. Has all that actually been confirmed, Doctor?
I mean, we've long known that liver disease is associated with that, with chronic use of alcohol. So I don't think that part is news. The cancer part. Now, I think what's controversial is what specific types, again, what the mechanism is. I don't think that part has actually been clearly there. But when they did look at some groups that had higher consumption versus others, there were higher risks. I think this is more of a legislature directive than necessarily a medical thing. I know the World Health Organization did come out with a statement on this as well, though.
Interesting. There's been a lot of news about Parkinson's lately, and a recent study discovered some potential biomarkers of environmental exposures in the disease. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this one is really interesting. I mean, for long we've looked for causes of Parkinson's. As everyone knows, it's a very debilitating disease that just continues to progress. But in this recent study, it was a small study. It was only about 196 patients, and they had about 86 healthy patients in this. And what they looked at was some markers, and that was methylation of DNA as a marker of progression of Parkinson's disease. And the methylation does have some environmental exposure associated with that, and therefore this is kind of opening up that, you know, there may be some environmental exposures that we, if we can manage, maybe we can delay or even prevent Parkinson's disease.
Lately, it seems like every week there is new research on Parkinson's. Are we getting closer to having either a cure or a better treatment?
I think the latter. I think better treatment as our understanding grows with all of this that research that comes out, I think we get one step closer. I think I'd be a little too aggressive to say it's right around the corner, but our understanding has definitely improved a lot.
Right. And are you seeing that, or are doctors seeing this in younger people now, or is there a certain age where this this becomes evident?
It's hard to say. I'm not aware of necessarily younger age. I think our ability to detect that and catch it sooner has definitely gotten better. So I think there's some bias introduced with that. I think with that, there are better treatments out there today than there were decades ago. So I think we're able to do a lot more. But there is a lot more work that needs to be done in this area.
And are we learning a lot more about the cause of Parkinson's?
Yeah, we know the fundamental cause is that over time we deplete dopamine in the deeper parts of the brain, and that leads to some movement disorders. It's really what's causing that depletion is some of that is still under research. Is it purely genetics? Is it internal? Are there external factors? And by understanding that, then we can pinpoint, hey, where can we make a difference on this in terms of prevention? And are there genetic markers that we can use to start to predict that someone may develop Parkinson's?
Continuing with Northwestern Medicine's Dr. Irfan Hafiz on this Monday, let's talk about IBS. An estimated 6% of people in the United States, with more women than men, suffer from irritable bowel syndrome. And there's a new study just published that may give us some clues about relief. What does this tell us, Doctor?
Sure. Yeah, this was published in The Lancet recently. And, you know, IBS is quite a debilitating disease and a lot of anxiety with it because your bowels are, you know, there's diarrhea, constipation. But what this did find is that there are some dietary changes that we can possibly make. And it's called a FODMAP diet. It's a bit of a mouthful. But basically, it's foods that have sugars in them, trying to reduce that. And that leads to less fermentation in the gut, less production of gas. So they did a study and they compared people who are on medication for IBS versus just on this FODMAP diet and medication and the FODMAP. And they found that the diet really seemed to be helpful in many patients in reducing their symptoms for a long time.
Hmm. Interesting. So this is about foods to avoid, basically?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, there's things like, you know, asparagus, cauliflower, apples, fruits, dairy products are in there too, bread. Now, that being said, it's a diet that's kind of hard to manage. So it does take time because it's very hard to eliminate all of these and not have any at all. So it's really a matter of trying to reduce some of this and gradually re-add a few things and see which one you can tolerate and which one you can't. So it does take a little bit of time, and there's online, there's some resources to look at what you can replace them with. Basically, you're trying to have longer chain sugars rather than shorter chain.
A lot of folks will be asking their doctor about that, I'm sure. And these days, it seems like everybody is on a weight loss drug. And there is an interesting report now about the cost of these drugs and what's happening, at least in some states, right?
Yeah, this is becoming these drugs are wildly popular. These are the GLP-1 inhibitors, and initially first introduced for diabetes, but found to have considerable weight loss effects. And these are drugs such as Wegovy and Zepbound and Ozempic are in these categories. But it turns out that the state of North Carolina, they're finding that their state insurance, health insurance for their teachers and state employees is being overrun by the cost of this drug. So the state is starting to look at towards the manufacturer to negotiate a pricing discount, because this is, I think it's turning out to be their largest cost drug for the for that state health insurance.
Yeah, not surprising. Let's move on to this new report about cancer survivors and loneliness. This is about mental health of these folks. And what do we learn from this study?
Yeah, this is another one. We know that mental health is so much influences outcomes, and I think this is just another one that's really gone on looking at cancer survivors, which is obviously a very significant milestone in anyone's life, you know, going through the treatments and surgeries that may be involved with that. But having family and social support is so important overall, and that's what this study really in the Journal of National Comprehensive Cancer Network in earlier this month published. And it really goes along with having that need for that social support that really influences that. It's not just the chemo and the radiation and the treatments, but it's also that overall wellness that's needed.
And about mental health, I think a lot of people wonder, especially about teenagers and young people, and actually adults for that matter, is this person moody? Does this person actually suffer from the kind of depression that requires professional mental health? How can you tell?
Yeah, sometimes it can be hard. I mean, we've all been teenagers, and, you know, being moody is kind of part of that. But I think it's making sure that, you know, they know that they have that social support there, that connection, the ability to talk. I think there's that piece there, and being able to listen. And, you know, and kids at that age usually may withdraw. They may, you know, they're forming other social structures and stuff, but making sure that we're still available for them is really a key piece there. And having that open line of communication there with the kids is there. I think this study that also looked at making sure that the parents' mental health is, you know, taken care of as well. What we don't want is that teen to feel like they're responsible for the parents' mental health as they're growing older. So it's really being available, being you know, in a good place for supporting them is important.
Men and women, physicians, are usually the first stop for people who have questions, and then you will usually refer to a psychiatrist or a therapist, won't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, when in doubt, I mean, if we are seeing, you know, behaviors that are concerning, more and more self-isolation, you know, really a lot of change in moods, I mean, definitely reaching out to your physician and seeking, you know, an expert in that field to do an assessment to say, hey, is this really just, you know, a phase, or is there more to this? Then it's something really important. I think early on, getting some professional help is key.
Northwestern Dr. Irfan Hafiz, I feel like I just crammed in as many questions as possible in my short appointment with you, Doctor. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Always a pleasure. Take care.